From the Atlantic to the Pacific, across the islands of the Caribbean, from mountain crest to mountain crest, from canyons to the clouds and into the cosmos, we are pumping wattage high and low, plus streaming worldwide on the internet and keeping you company tonight. It's the place to relax and hang out. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren, and this is Speaking of Strange, giving you the latest and discussing the weirdest. We have assembled the finest team of reporters and the most intriguing guests. And that's why we are your favorite hub in a wild world, so keep it tuned right here. Soon we are going to bring Mr. Mobius into the conversation, but being that this is one of our earlier Halloween editions of the show for 2014, I was reminded to share a story with you that I often think about this time of year, and that's because a lot of people enjoy being scared silly, and they like to go to these horror fun houses where you have people like Leatherface and Michael Myers chasing you around in these rather horrific settings. And for some reason, there is this historical episode that kind of reminds me of that realistic environment. And perhaps not surprisingly, it comes to us from a rather dreary place, Russia. You see, in the late 1930s, Stalin was such a nice guy that, he invaded Poland and he took lots and lots of prisoners, thousands of them, and decided instead of keeping them pent up in the prison camp that he would just have them all executed. I always thought historically it was amazing that Stalin was in many ways just as bad as Hitler, and yet things played out so that, you know, there was that moment when Franklin Roosevelt and Churchill had to kind of sit there next to him and grit their teeth and act like they were all buddies for this classic photograph of the three. And Stalin was, he was a bad guy, but he still came out on top after World War II. Well, this particular incident took place in April of 1940. When Stalin decided that he wanted to kill thousands of people in this prison, he wasn't sure the best way to handle it, and so he went to a man called Vasily Blokhin. Blokhin was 45 years old in 1940, and he was already sort of renowned for what they called black work, meaning assassinations, torture, intimidation, and executions conducted clandestinely. He had a reputation for being a pugnacious man and really a master of horror and cold efficiency. And so he told Blokhin, figure out how you want to handle this. So Blokhin had a special area renovated next to the prison camp. And he came up with this ambitious quota of trying to execute at least 300 people per night. The work would be conducted when the sun went down, and it would conclude by daybreak, so it was not very clear exactly what was going on. And he would work for 10 hours a night. Basically, one by one, each of the prisoners were individually led to a small chamber that had been painted red and known as the Leninist Room. Each person was given a cursory positive identification before being handcuffed and then taken to the execution room next door. It had been designed with padded walls for soundproofing. And there, waiting within, was Blokhin with his executioner's garb. He would wear a leather apron, a leather hat, and shoulder-length leather gloves. And there, inside this room, without a hearing or the reading of a sentence or any other formalities, each prisoner was brought in and restrained by the guards while Blokhin shot him once in the base of the skull with a German Walther. The floor was sloped, and they had hoses there to help wash away some of the blood and roll the bodies down into a pile. And each night, after the 10 hours of execution was over, he would provide a nice stockpile of vodka for himself and all of his men to sit around and drink. And the corpses were transported to a nearby field where a bulldozer would dig trenches and bury them all. Vasily Blokhin killed hundreds of people 10 hours a night, night after night, with his own hand. For 28 days, this went on. And when those 28 days were over, he had single-handedly killed 7,000 people. And to this day, it remains the most organized and protracted mass murder by a single individual on record. He is actually named as the Guinness World Record holder for the most prolific executioner. Apparently, Blokhin was celebrated and rewarded for his highly efficient work, but for some reason, he was forcibly retired in 1953, following Stalin's death. And he sank, they say, into alcoholism, gradually went sort of insane, and then in 1955, at the age of 60, he killed himself. And I've always thought about that environment that they created to so coldly and effectively kill people in this horror chamber, and what it would be like to sit around afterward and be that guy, knowing that you had personally taken the life of 7,000 people. It's always a little bit disturbing, isn't it? I've got a story I'm going to tell you later, a true incident from history, which is so unnerving. I'm going to give a warning before I read it because some people should not even be exposed to this. It'll give you bad dreams tonight. And let me assure you that some of the stories that we're going to dig into the rest of October will be much more fun and lighthearted and not as dark as what we're going to expose you to tonight. But let's take a moment to switch gears and invite our old buddy, the mysterious Mr. Mobius, back to Speaking of Strange. How are you tonight, Mobius?
Hey, dude, how's it going?
Hey, good. I'm great. You know, here I am, finally back in the studio, in the flesh, with Sam, with Shelley, and, you know, that atmosphere of Halloween is pervasive. There's kind of a cold mist rolling in on the night air, and, well, the tone is being set. Are you getting in the Halloween spirit yourself, Mobius?
You can feel it, and you can start to smell it in the air, so yeah, it's coming.
Well, you know, you and I talked a lot when I was in Puerto Rico, and, of course, over the summer especially, I was doing a lot of radio interviews with cities around the world, and people were starting to really learn about all the success that was taking place around the globe with the wishing machine. And earlier, I had told everybody that you and I, Mobius, have been friends for many years, and we've worked on a lot of projects. Some of them are very complicated, like the experiment that you played a major role in engineering for the Apparition movie, in which we, God forbid, hooked Shelley Brain's head up.
Shelley Brain's head up?
Shelley's brains and head up. and broadcast that and created some kind of a monstrosity. If Stephen Hawking has anything to worry about, it's that. What we unleashed.
That's true.
But now, Mobius, because you are such a technically minded guy, you're very rooted in science, and you are an engineer. You're also very open-minded, but you had told me that for a long time, despite the fact that the wishing machine was doing so well, and for those who have not heard, the wishing machine, well, it's what it sounds like it is. It's a box that makes your wishes come true. You can go to wishingmachineproject.com to read about it and read testimonials. You, Mobius, said that you were having some problems grasping how this could work, and yet recently things have been changing a little bit. Tell us about the transition you went through.
Okay, well, I'm open-minded, but I'm also very logical. So, I mean, I've seen the stories, and the success and the people talking about it. But I always told you that intellectually that I found the whole concept somewhat psychologically overwhelming for the way I think. But I guess what you want me to say is this, and I have to confess the story's true. So I got a wishing machine from you with the job to test it and to see what the results would be. And I was open-minded, and I in no way tried to, you know, either push or, you know, repel the results. I simply tested it. But I used a variable in the equation of what you put on the unit when you're setting it up for your wish. And it probably represented a lot. I feel very strongly against the new Star Trek movies. I just don't think they're very scientific or logical. And so I had myself at a very young age in a Spock-style Star Trek jacket. And I used that just because it represented the basis of when I became the desire to be a paranormal investigator, Scooby-Doo, Star Trek, the whole thing made manifest now. And I thought it was a good choice of photo. I set everything up, and I always said to myself, and I said it out loud since watching the movies, I wish I could talk to the guy that made the Star Trek bridge in the movies. They have barcode readers and Dyson hand dryers in the movies. Boy, would I have a thing to say. And I said that maybe hours after having set up the experiment. Within 45 minutes after making the statement, I found myself in a conversation with the guy that made the Star Trek bridge. He was asking me for a job reference or to do some work. And I gave you a copy of the dialogue. I did not even understand it as I continued to talk to him what was actually happening. And so after talking in computer dialogue, it was online, for about 5 minutes, he shared his resume with me, where to look. And I just about laid an egg, because there it was. It, you know, I understood what I was seeing. I knew who he was and what he was saying. And it allowed the exact conversation I wanted to have and always visualized having to instantly manifest. And I sat there and I went, wow, this is insane. You know, this the guy of this caliber who, what, probably makes $3,000 an hour would be having this bizarre conversation with me. But also, I was able to hook him up on a job, at least point him in the right direction, and so it was to everybody's highest good. And I would say, given, you know, the framing of what I told you, mm-hmm. the odds are, what, a million or a billion to one?
Well, I'll tell you what, let's hold it right there. We're coming up on a break. When we come back, we'll hear the rest of this story as well as another amazing experience that you had. I'm Joshua P. Warren. This is Speaking of Strange.
A smile from a veil. Do you think you can tell?
Doctor, I was in love with you. I told the witch doctor I was in love with you. And then the witch doctor, he told me what to do. He said,
Yeah, it's magic, all right. It's called the Wishing Machine, and there is a lot of sorcery taking place this time of year when it comes to the fall and the harvest time and Halloween. And some people, they enjoy magical trinkets and sigils and symbols, but some people enjoy radionics, techno-shamanism. And, you know, I wanted Mobius to tell you what his experiments have yielded. Welcome back to Speaking of Strange, brought to you tonight by Wright's Coin Shop. And we also want to give a shout-out there to our friend Christopher over at Christopher's Computers. If you're in the market for a new computer or you just need some updates or maybe you have a virus, you can save yourself a lot of money. If you're not into buying a new computer, he'll help you make the best of the one you have. Go to christopherscomputers.com. He's located on Merriman Avenue here in Asheville, right next to the Wendy's. And you can call them at 828-670-9800. That's 828-670-9800. And even if you're not here in the Asheville area, he might be able to help you get a better deal than you're going to find wherever you do live. So all that and more is at speakingofstrange.com. Now, if you missed the last segment, let me just sort of recap that Mobius is a hardcore, true, diehard Trekkie. He is a truly enthusiastic fan, and he just wants the props and the scenarios in the Star Trek movies and productions to be realistic so that he can suspend his disbelief and really get into the story. And so he saw some of the latest Star Trek productions and said, oh, this is ridiculous. Some of the props in these things are completely unrealistic. We're talking about, you know, like he was saying, instead of creating some custom, exotic, futuristic representative of a piece of equipment, well, they just go to, like, Walmart and get a barcode scanner or go get a Dyson hand dryer that you could find in the bathroom at your local pizzeria and putting them into these sophisticated environments like the bridge. And he put a picture of himself on the Wishing Machine wearing a Spock coat or jacket and made this sort of statement out loud that he would like to have the opportunity to work on these projects and improve them. And 45 minutes later, this complete stranger contacts him, and it is none other than the guy in charge of the props for the Star Trek movies. This is impossible by most standards, but this is what happened with the Wishing Machine. Please continue, Mobius.
Yeah, not only was he talking to me, he was asking me for a job reference. So it was impossible. But as I sent you that, and I told you, I said, I've really had something bizarre happen. I still don't even know statistically what the odds were, but shortly thereafter, also, I made this statement. A friend of mine had mentioned we really needed chocolate, and there was a guy that used to come and spend a few weeks. He's kind of our friend from Germany, as we have a Rob from Holland, and he would bring us chocolate. And so we were thinking about it. Wow, it's been like 2008 since we saw this guy. And out loud, we said, wow, we wish he would come right now and bring some chocolate. And honestly, I didn't even think of it as a wish. It was just a very an emotional statement. But again, I went to bed. I woke up. There was a knock at the door. Walked and opened it. And the guy was standing there with bags of chocolate for everybody in the house. Have not seen him, you know, since all that time. And he was standing there. I'm like, what just happened? So, honestly, I have to tell you, somehow or another, this Wishing Machine has the bizarre way, after it came into my life, when you, like, really have a strong emotional thing that you focus on, and you can taste it, see it, and feel it, and you make this projection, I've now seen it happen quite a few times. And I never thought I would be, you know, on your show telling you that, because it's not logical. But it has happened to me.
And every time I hear about an experience like this, it blows my mind, and yet it doesn't even really even surprise me anymore, because it happens every day. And, you know, I think it's even more significant for me when it comes from somebody like you, whom I know and have a background with. But, you know, people from all over the world, countries around the world, are contacting me every day to tell me about similar things that have happened. And that's why we have, you know, one person will go out and they'll buy a wishing machine, and then they'll come back the next month and they'll buy a second one, and then a third one, and a fourth one. And there are people out there who have four or five of these things, if not more, all sitting around working simultaneously on different wishes, because you can only use one box for one wish at one point in time. So now that you've all heard that, I hope that you will go to wishingmachineproject.com. Watch all the material. There's a lot of material, hours and hours there of videos, live interactive webinars, interviews on the radio, testimonials, everything that you'll need to realize that this is actually a technology that's changing people's lives. And this February of 2015, I am going to be speaking at the International UFO Congress in Scottsdale, Arizona. This is going to be my second time speaking at the Congress. Last time it was in Laughlin, Nevada, and that was actually years ago. So I figured while I'm out there in Arizona, I may as well add another little special trip and go to one of my favorite places, Sedona, Arizona. And so I'm actually going to host an in-person wishing machine workshop in Sedona. So if you are looking for a way to really pick up your spirits this February, maybe you do both of them. You go to the International UFO Congress, and the lineup they have there is, you know, top-notch, just all A-list UFO people. And then make the short drive to Sedona and do a wishing machine workshop. So, again, wishingmachineproject.com. Thank you for sharing those experiences, Mobius. And tell me now, do you have any special thoughts or plans for the Halloween season that you'd like to pass along to any of your fans and the listeners, Mobius?
Oh, well, I know that we're kind of excited. The Asheville Zombie Walk is coming back to the downtown.
Mm-hmm.
It's on October 12th, and I know we're going to be doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no telling. I still got a lot of things we're looking at, but if you're at the Zombie Walk, you might recognize me. I'll probably be wearing a long black cape. Come up and say hello.
So you're definitely going to be there. I saw Shelly's eyes just light up. Shelly, you're going to be at the Zombie Walk?
I would love to be. I didn't know that it was going to come back downtown. We had so much fun. Remember?
Yes, we did.
We did. Okay,
we have to hook up.
Well, definitely.
Make a party out of this.
Definitely.
All right, very cool. And Mobius, you have a birthday coming up too, don't you?
About the same time, yes, I do.
All right.
You're torturing me, aren't you? Okay.
Yeah, well, you know, this is the birthday time of year. It's amazing how many people have birthdays in the fall. So that's very cool. All right, my friend. Well, thanks for coming back onto the program. I'm going to tell some more spooky stories, and soon we'll get you here in the studio and in the flesh.
Okay. Peace and love.
All right. Same to you, my friend. Good night. Well, so there you have it, a little positive shining light in the midst of some of the dreary content that I'm sharing with you because, well, it's a spooky time of year. It's one thing when you start talking about monsters like werewolves or vampires or even to a certain extent, you know, ghostly things that may or may not be real. But tonight, some of the stories I'm sharing with you are about things that were very real. Evil people. And when you start looking at the list of mass murderers and serial killers, I think that if you really start digging into what they did, maybe the creepiest one of all was a man named Albert Fish. And he was especially a boogeyman because he went after children. And he did the most horrible, evil things you can imagine to children before and, well, even after he killed them. When we come back, I'm going to tell you a little bit about this wicked man, this sick person. But the thing that I believe is most disturbing is that on one occasion in particular, he kidnapped a little girl. And then afterward, he sent a very detailed letter to her mother about what he did to this child, and it makes your skin crawl. I'm Joshua P. Warren. This is the show where the unusual becomes usual. It's called Speaking of Strange.
Way out on old Lindale Mountain, where the Bear and the Catamount range, there a strange ghostly light can be seen every night, which no scientist or hunter can explain. In the mountains of North Carolina near Lindale, there exists a strange phenomenon called the Brown Mountain Lights. On a clear night, these lights will appear and move about in a ghost-like manner on the mountaintop and down in the valley. These lights have been observed since the early days of the covered wagon, and to this day, no one can explain their mystery. Even scientists who come from various parts of the world can offer no solution. Uncle Fate Wiseman, who spent his entire 80 years in these mountains, used to tell this story, which to me could be as true as any other tale ever told, about the legend of the Brown Mountain Lights. Days of the old covered wagon, when they camped on the flat for the night, with the stars growing dim on the old high gorge rim, they'd watch for that brown mountain light. High on the mountain, then down in the canyon below, it shines like the crown of an angel and fades as the mist comes and goes. Way over yonder, night after night until dawn, while a faithful old slave come back from the grave, while he's searching, searching, searching for his master who's long, long gone.
Welcome back to Speaking of Strange, the show where the unusual becomes usual. I'm Joshua P. Warren, and this program is presented by Wright's Coin Shop. And you can call Wright's Coin Shop at 828-298-5402. Here it is, October, and so throughout the month I'm going to share some dark content with you, and some of it will be kind of fun and family-friendly, and some of it is going to be pretty disturbing. And so tonight I'm going to read a letter to you written by a man who was as wicked and evil and sick and perverted and diabolical as it gets, in my opinion. You may even know the name Albert Fish. He lived from 1870 until he was executed in 1936 by the electric chair. Something they say he kind of enjoyed. He was certainly a sadomasochist, meaning he enjoyed inflicting pain and receiving it. When they finally busted him, they found that he had a paddle at his house with nails sticking out of it that he would beat himself with. And his internal organs were full of needles that he had pushed into his own body. One of those guys, like, how do you deal with somebody like that, right? Well, he always targeted children, since they are the most helpless ones, but especially because he thought they were very tasty. And I think that one thing that always stood out about this guy is that sometimes you wonder if these people who commit these horrible acts do this and just because they're deranged. But this guy gave us proof that he not only did it and had a very clear mind about it, but enjoyed sort of rubbing it in to, in this case, the mother of one of the victims. So I'm just going to share this one with you. This guy was known by many names. He was from New York. They called him the Gray Man, the Werewolf of Wisteria, the Brooklyn Vampire, the Moon Maniac, and simply enough, the Boogeyman. And, yeah, he would abduct kids and do every horrible, nasty thing you can think of and torture them and then kill them, and he would often eat them. He said that he believed he'd done this to about 100 kids. They don't know for sure how many, but there were plenty. Well, here's the one that got him caught. This happened in 1928 when Albert Fish was 58 years old. And it makes you think twice about listing yourself in the classifieds. Because he saw a classified advertisement in the Sunday edition of the New York World that read, quote, young man, 18, wishes position in country, Edward Budd, blah, blah, blah. Basically, it's a guy, an 18-year-old, looking for a job. And Fish began to fantasize about this being a murder victim. And he arranged to portray himself as an employer and go visit this young man at his family's home in Manhattan there, called the Budd family. And the family, of course, they were trying to impress Albert Fish, who came in there with a fake name, and the mother fixed a really nice dinner. But when Fish got there and sat down with the family, he became, well, smitten with Edward's 10-year-old sister. Her name was Grace Budd. And he decided that she was going to be the victim instead of Edward. And believe it or not, this man was so wicked and charming that during the course of the dinner, he was able to invent a story about his niece having a birthday party nearby and convinced the parents to allow him to take her to the supposed niece's birthday party where all the other children were. And so he very easily took her out of the house, and they never saw her again. Well, that was 1928. So here we go. 1934, a letter was written. We're talking 6 years later. A letter was sent to Grace Budd's mother. And it was sent anonymously, but it was fortunately what led police to Fish. Mrs. Budd herself was illiterate and couldn't even read the letter, so she had her son read it to her. Now, I'm going to have to edit this as I read it. There's certain content and certain words that would not be appropriate on the radio. But here is essentially the letter he wrote. Dear Mrs. Budd, in 1894, a friend of mine shipped as a deckhand on the steamer Tacoma, Captain John Davis. They sailed from San Francisco for Hong Kong, China. On arriving there, he and two others went ashore and got drunk. When they returned, the boat was gone. At that time, there was famine in China. Meat of any kind was from $1 to $3 per pound. So great was the suffering among the very poor that all of their children under 12 were sold for food in order to keep others from starving. A boy or girl under 14 was not safe in the street. You could go into any shop and ask for steak, chops, or stew meat. And part of the body of a boy or girl would be brought out, and you just cut from it what you wanted. A boy or girl's behind, which is the sweetest part of the body, and sold as a veal cutlet, brought the highest price. John stayed there so long he acquired a taste for human flesh, and on his return to New York he stole two boys, 1 7 and 1 11. He took them from their home and tied them in a closet, and then for several days and nights he tortured them and spanked them to make their meat good and tender. First, he killed the 11-year-old boy because he had the fattest behind, and of course the most meat on it. Every part of his body was cooked and eaten except the head, bones, and guts. He was roasted in the oven, boiled, broiled, fried, and stewed. The other little boy was next, and he went about the same way. At that time, I was living at 409 East 100th Street nearby. And he told me so often how good human flesh was that I made up my mind to taste it. So on Sunday, June the 3rd, 1928, I called on you at your house at 406 West 15th Street. I brought you pot cheese and strawberries. We had lunch. And I saw Grace and made up my mind to eat her. On the pretense of taking her to a party, you said she could go. I took her to an empty house in Westchester I'd already picked out. When we got there, I told her to remain outside. She picked wildflowers, and I went upstairs and stripped off the clothes I didn't want to get blood on. When all was ready, I went to the window and called her, and then I hid in a closet until she came in the room. She became scared and started to cry and run down the stairs. I grabbed her, and she said she would tell her mama. Boy, she did kick and bite and scratch, but I choked her to death, and then I cut her in small pieces so I could take my meat to my room, cook it, and eat it. Oh, how sweet and tender her little butt was, roasted in the oven. It took me 9 days to eat her entire body. Now, I edited some stuff out of that, guys.
I feel so uplifted now.
Yeah. Is that not one of the most horrible things that you've ever, well, been exposed to? That a mother would receive that kind of a frank description of this horrific deed done to the child. Police investigated that letter, and they took details from it, like the names of the ship that he mentioned, and the captain, and who this friend was. And fortunately, their investigation was a success, and they captured him. And at that point, they realized that his whole body was full of, again, razor blades and pins and needles and things that he would put into his own body. And he was very open talking about the horrible things that he had done. So a lot of people were happy when he was put in the electric chair. But when you read stuff like that, that's factual from history, it goes to show you just how warped and twisted real human beings are. You don't have to worry so much about the werewolves and the vampires, but there was a time when that kind of act was so outrageous, people invented stories about werewolves and vampires and other creatures because they couldn't fathom that human beings would be responsible for some of the dismembered, eaten bodies that were found when serial killers were on the loose. We're going to take a break. When we come back, some people would say, well, that is a guy who is absolutely possessed by the devil. Well, do you know that there is a new controversy that's come up about the devil and about Satanism in Orange County, Florida? I'll tell you what they're talking about when we return. It's the program where the unusual becomes usual. I'm Joshua P. Warren, and this is Speaking of Strange.
We'll be right back. discontent. Lately he's been overheard in Mayfair. You better stay away from him. He'll rip your lungs out, Tim. I'd like to meet his tailor.
And we are in the final minutes of hour number two on tonight's Speaking of Strange. And next hour is what we call the Dark 30 Hour. Yes, it gets worse, my friends. So that's some of the content that is, well, the most outrageous and controversial news of the week. So some of you may want to stick around and listen to that. Some of you may not. That's the wonderful thing about living in a free country and having technology at your disposal that allows you to select the type of programming you want to put into your mind. You can go to speakingofstrange.com if you want to learn more about the things we discuss. Links to news stories, Facebook page, Twitter. Also a link to Wright's Coin Shop, 828-298-5402. So I mentioned I have a couple stories here, at least one that are kind of interesting. I just read to you a letter written by a very evil, terrible man about one of his deeds. And, of course, a lot of folks believe that, well, guys like him were possessed by the devil. And that some people still don't like the Halloween season because they believe the devil is allowed to run amok. Well, there has been some controversy and some headlines in Orange County, Florida. That's our Florida bell. And says here, have you ever wondered what a satanic children's coloring book might look like? Well, thanks to the great state of Florida, you can for certain. Behold the Satanic Children's Big Book of Activities. A coloring book that is being disseminated across Orange County public schools. Apparently they say the story is about apparently here's what they're saying. A Christian group received permission to distribute Bibles and other religious materials to their students, leading atheist groups to appeal for an equal opportunity, and so therefore it wasn't long before the satanic community hopped on board as well. I also want to point out here for a moment that I believe this story is about a group called the Satanic Temple. And you may or may not know that years ago I made a documentary about the Church of Satan. I was the first outsider in something like 40 years allowed to go into the Church of Satan and document rituals. I was hoping to understand why they existed and whether or not they were actually producing paranormal results. The Church of Satan, created by Anton LaVey, is different than the Satanic Temple. Just so you know, considering that, I'm not sure what the beliefs are of the Satanic Temple, but apparently a spokesperson says, if a public school board is going to allow religious pamphlets and full Bibles to be distributed to students, we think the responsible thing to do is ensure these students are given access to a variety of different religious opinions, as opposed to standing idly by while one religious voice dominates the discourse and delivers propaganda to youth. Let's see. It goes on to say, I'm quite certain that all of the children in the Florida schools are already aware of the Christian religion and its Bible, and this might be the first exposure these kids have to the actual practice of Satanism. We think many students will be very curious to see what we offer, end quote. This is a good reason why there should very much be a separation of church and state, it seems like, because you open many cans of worms.
Because they do kind of have a point. And if, even though I was raised in the church, whatever, they do have a point. If you're going to do one, then you have to do with them all.
Well, you know, it's like you always read about when it comes to political philosophy. The founders of this country said freedom of speech was not there to protect the popular opinion. It's to protect the unpopular, and that's the price that we pay for living in a free country. people get to voice unpopular opinions as well. But I still haven't seen what this coloring book looks like.
You want me to find some?
Yeah, let's find some pictures and see what's in a satanic coloring book.
Beelzebub. Ice skating.
Right. Could be the nicest, sweetest little cute thing we've ever seen. We're going to take a break. When we come back, yes, it will be time for The Dark 30 Hour. It's the show where we dig into the amazing, the remarkable, the extraordinary, the downright weird. I'm Joshua P. Warren. You're listening to Speaking of Strange.